And when I say overcome, I mean that in a broad sense as well. I don't mean that all of us globally wake up simultaneously. I mean that enough of us recognize. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't mean that it is literally overcome in a material sense. I mean that in our hearts we recognize that it is in all of us, and that is it is in us that it is overcome for us to get our freedom, and that we do this by helping each other, by loving each other. Physically together, meeting. Turning now to Alice, our Alice Miller readings. And we are continuing the section Unintentional Cruelty Hurts Too. And we had just said that that making the tragedy visible offers the possibility for change, is what she's saying. The realization that even with the best will in the world, we are not omnipotent, that we are subject to compulsions under class, and that we cannot love our child in the way we would like to, may lead to sorrow, but should not awaken guilt feelings, because the latter imply a power and freedom we do not have. Burdened by guilt ourselves, will burden our children as well and tie them to us for their whole lives. But by means of our mourning, we can set our children free. Distinguishing between mourning and guilt feelings might also help to break the silence between the generations on the subject of the crimes of the Nazi period. Mourning is the opposite of feeling guilt. It's an expression of pain that things happened as they did and that there's no way to change the past. We can share this pain with our children without having to feel ashamed. Guilt feelings are something we try to repress or shift to our children, or both. Since sorrow reactivates numbed feelings, it can enable young people to realize what their parents once inflicted on them in the well-meaning attempt to train them to be obedient from an early age. This can lead to an eruption of justifiable anger and to the painful recognition that one's own parents, who are already over 50, are still defending their old principles, are unable to understand the anger of their grown child, and are hurt and wounded by reproaches. Then the child wishes he or she could take back what's been said and undo all that's happened, because now the old familiar fears that these reproaches will send the parents to their graves return. If children are told early and often enough, "You'll be the death of me yet," these words remain with them all their life. And yet, even if a person is once again left alone with this awakened anger, because his aging parents can bear it just as little as before, the mere admission of this feeling to consciousness can lead them out of the dead end of self-alienation. Then, at long last, the true child, the healthy child, can live. The child who finds it impossible to understand why his parents are hurting him, and at the same time forbidding him to cry, weep, or even speak in his pain. The child who adapts to parental demands. And I hope folks understand this point she's making, that when our children try to quote unquote understand the parent, see from their perspective. What that does is silence their own pain. They need that anger. They need that pain to heal the wounds, because it is truly not comprehensible. And they should not try to make excuses, is what she's arguing. The child who adapts to parental demands always tries to understand this absurdity and will accept it as a matter of course. But he has to pay for this pseudo-understanding with his feelings and his sensitivity to his own needs, i.e., with his authentic self. This is why access to the normal, angry, uncomprehending, and rebellious child he once was had previously been blocked off. When this child within the adult is liberated, he will discover his vital roots and strength. To be free to express resentment dating back to early childhood doesn't mean that one now becomes a resentful person, but rather the exact opposite. For the very reason that one is permitted to experience these feelings that were directed against the parents, one does not have to use surrogate figures for purposes of abreaction. Only hatred felt for surrogates is endless and insatiable, as we saw in the case of Adolf Hitler. Because on a conscious level, the feeling is separated from the person against whom it was originally directed. For these reasons, I believe that the free expression of resentment against one's parents represents a great opportunity. It provides access to one's true self, reactivates numbed feelings, opens the way for mourning, and with luck, reconciliation. In any case, it's an essential part of the process of psychic healing. But anyone who thinks that I'm reproaching these aging parents would be misunderstanding my meaning completely. I have neither the right nor the grounds to do so. I was not their child, was not compelled by them to be silent, was not raised by them, and, as an adult, know that they, like all parents, could do no differently than behave the way they did. Because I encourage the child within the adult to acknowledge his feelings, including his resentment, but don't absolve him from these feelings, and because I don't place blame on the parents, I apparently create difficulties for many of my readers. It would be so much simpler to say it's all the children's fault, or the parents, or the blame can be divided. This is exactly what I don't want to do, because as an adult, I know it's not a question of blame, but of not being able to do any differently. Children cannot understand this, however, and they fall ill in the attempt to do so because of a lack of access to their feelings. Only if the child in the adult suspends his futile attempt to understand can he begin to feel his pain. I believe that the children of those adults who finally dare to face their feelings will benefit as a result. Perhaps this explanation cannot clear up the misunderstandings that frequently arise in this connection, for they are not rooted in the intellect. If someone learned from an early age to feel guilty for everything and to regard his parents as beyond reproach, my ideas will of necessity cause him feelings of anxiety and guilt. We can see just how strong his attitude, instilled at an early age, is by observing older people. As soon as they find themselves in the situation of physical helplessness and dependence, they may feel guilty for every little thing and may even regard their own children as stern judges, providing the children are no longer submissive as they once were. As a result, the grown children feel they have to spare their parents out of considerateness, and the fear of hurting them condemns the children to silence once again. Since many psychologists never had the opportunity to free themselves from this fear and to find out that parents need not die if they hear the truth about their child, they will be inclined to encourage a reconciliation, quote unquote, between patients and parents as quickly as possible. If the underlying rage has not been experienced, however, the reconciliation is an illusory one. It will only cover over the rage that has been bottled up unconsciously or has been directed against others and will reinforce the patient's false self, even at the expense of his children, who will certainly sense the parents' true feelings. And yet, in spite of these impediments, there are an increasing number of books in which young people confront their parents more freely and openly and honestly than was previously possible. This fact awakens hope that critical writers will produce critical readers who will refuse to allow themselves to be made to feel guilty or more guilty by the poisonous pedagogy to be found in the professional literature in the areas of education, psychology, ethics, or biography. And this concludes the chapter, Unintentional Cruelty Hurts Too. And I was intending to go a bit further, and that's reflected in the PDF. I'll have to modify it because we are at the 10 o'clock hour. And thank you, as always, for listening. I'm so grateful that you do. And I only have eyes for you. Oh, dear.